Now, so-called post-industrial areas in the Midwest have gotten a lot of attention since the 2016 election when they helped deliver a victory for Donald Trump. One of those areas is Kenosha County. Formerly the home of the American Motors Corporation and other big manufacturers, it was a center of union labor and a stronghold for Democrats, something the party hopes to regain after Republicans won the county 4 years ago. Our next guest spent 6 weeks in Kenosha this winter asking people how they felt about their local economy, civic life, and what energizes and frustrates them about politics. He found an attitude from many residents that's more complex than much of the media and a lot of political candidates might realize. James Pogue is a contributor to Harper's Magazine and author of the August cover story, The Art of Losing: Can Democrats Win Back Post-Industrial America? James, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, you start your piece by acknowledging something that a lot of us appreciate, that the, quote, coastal journalist visiting a Midwestern town to find out why Donald Trump won the last election is a pretty worn out trope by this point. You didn't want to do that. You didn't want to fall into that trap. What were you personally curious about when you came to Kenosha?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, you know, I don't mention this in the piece, but I'm from southwestern Ohio, which is sort of like southeastern Wisconsin, a pretty key swing area in the country. And so I had seen people coming, you know, I grew up in Cincinnati. I'd seen people coming to Dayton, Ohio. It's a big one, like Youngstown, like Kenosha, a lot of these quote unquote post-industrial places where reporters have flown in and tried to divine something about why it is that a lot of these places flipped to Trump. And so what I was interested in was, you know, staying for a little bit longer than a lot of these people are able to do. I'm young, I don't have kids, so I had the freedom to do that. And to try and divine something that went a little deeper than the kind of like angry white male rage explanation for how Donald Trump got elected, which I think is a big part of the confusion that Democrats have about how to go forward.
You really can't talk about southeastern Wisconsin without talking about labor unions. Union labor at plants like American Motors was behind a lot of the growth and real prosperity in the past for places like Kenosha and the people that called them home. Today, though, things are different. How did unions figure into people's thinking about the economy today?
Well, I think there's a really complicated conversation to have about what role unions played, not only in our economic life in terms of in helping people to ensure that they had a middle class way of existing in the 20th century, but also in our sort of social and civic ways of life, right? And so Kenosha is a really good example of a place where unions suffused all parts of the social fabric, not just people's economic lives. And not only did they help to have people, you know, be able to think, hey, I have security, I have a future, I have a future in this place, they helped bind people to the place, they helped make people feel at home, and they helped, you know, you would have parades, you would have social clubs, you would have all of these things that the unions were in a certain way a focal point for, right? And the reason that I think Kenosha is a really good example of forces that have forces that have buffeted people across the country is that Kenosha has a very clear example in the union of a social shaping civic force that has gone away, as many social shaping civic forces have gone away as our lives have become more disordered, more uncertain over the years. And so in a certain way, I think the unions are very specific to places, you know, in the industrialized North where they were very strong. But I also think that their departure from the fabric of our lives reflects something that's happened across the country.
I thought it was really interesting that as you were talking to young people who either, well, certainly weren't working in those union heydays, but maybe even don't have a personal memory of them, hear stories from their mothers, their fathers, their aunts, their uncles about what it was like then and how you could make a really good living when you were part of a union and working in a local factory. What really stood out to you in talking to those young people about who have this backdrop of what it used to be like and what their life is like now?
Well, you know, there was one guy I talked to who had a really interesting take in the sense that he spoke exactly in the way you're talking about how, you know, once upon a time, life in Kenosha might have been much easier for a youngish male. I'm 33. He was somewhere around that age himself, you know, trying to make a life and a family at this kind of key time in your life. He had this very rosy view of how Kenosha had been once upon a time. But interestingly, he actually was in a union. And something that had happened with him, I think, mirrors something that's happened both with unions and maybe with government in America in certain ways, where you strip away the functions and the power of it to do good in people's lives, and they stop believing in it, right? So he was in the tin workers union, but he was like, ah, it's just a, you know, a way for people to get advancement. And, you know, he worked down in Illinois and he was just like, ah, you know, those people are all just corrupt, which I know nothing about. But it was interesting that that was his perspective. He didn't see the union as something that sort of stitched him into a broader labor movement anymore. And I think that that's something that a lot of people who, you know, work in this country and are worried about their futures, their retirements, their health benefits, all these things, we've sort of lost the sense of being a part of a greater movement.
We're talking with James Pogue right now. He's a contributor to Harper's Magazine and author of the August cover story titled "The Art of Losing: Can Democrats Win Back Post-Industrial America?" And you point out that, you know, no big surprise, our politics get talked about and assumed to be very polarized, that they're driven by anger, with really entrenched, passionate people on both sides. And while there's certainly an element of truth to that, and you can find those people, that's not the whole story of what you encountered in Kenosha. Can you talk a little bit about the general mood around politics and partisanship that you saw there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I mentioned in the story that I'm as guilty as anyone of this. And, you know, part of that is because so much of reporting on politics in this country today involves reporting on people who seem quite extreme, right? And reporting on people who are driving politics at the margins. And, you know, that can be of great interest. You know, I followed the Bernie Sanders campaign with a lot of interest because I felt like it was inspiring people from outside the, you know, normal political realms, as indeed Trump did. But then there's a lot of people who I think are, would be better described as sort of unconvinced that politics even affects their lives at all, and unconvinced that there is any vehicle whatsoever for politics for them anymore. And again, that goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about with unions, where people have sort of stopped believing in these structural and societal forces having any ability to work a good change for them in their lives and in the broader political sphere. And so it was interesting in Kenosha because you had a certain number of people who were very passionate on either side. We had a lot of people who were just sort of confused about why they should support one person, why Democrats are so alarmed by Trump. I heard over and over a lot of people sort of earnestly asking me why I thought Democrats thought Trump was so evil. And of course, I don't have an answer for that. But it was just interesting to hear over and over a sort of perplexity at that question. These weren't diehard Trump people. These were genuinely confused people, which was interesting.
There have certainly been some major changes over the years in places like Kenosha and Kenosha itself, but there are still jobs to be had. And some people you talked to described it as, you know, a pretty lively and vibrant place. That doesn't fit into the narrative of working class anger and resentment that has been really, you know, so dominant in the stories that have been told in the last 4 years.
No, and indeed, and the kind of plain speaking answer for that is, you know, a lot of people have just told the story wrong. You know, the Trump revolution, in addition to Brexit, in addition to elections in Italy and Hungary and other places, have been in large part bourgeois revolutions. That's not, you know, that's not a negative designation or anything. It's just, if you look at the actual numbers, a lot of the people who have been really taken by Trump are people who had very good lives, say, in the 1970s, and who sort of imagined that America kind of hit its peak then and are angry at changes that have happened since. Is that the same thing as the desperation and the working class anger and the, you know, the even the xenophobia that oftentimes is described as being the primary driver of the Trump movement? It overlaps with all of those, but I don't think it's the same thing. And so, you know, in Kenosha, you had, at the time of Trump's election, you had some of the fastest job growth in the Kenosha sort of micropolitan area of anywhere in the country. So it wasn't people who didn't have jobs. It was people who felt on some level, at least according to what I was hearing, it was people who felt a kind of deeper alienation from our broader politics and who saw in Trump a sort of movement to join. And they were very excited about that. It was a way of reconnecting with a belief in America and a belief in an American project. Whether you like that project or not, that's a different thing. But that was sort of how his appeal worked.
So there are obviously nuances to the story that I think both a lot of politicians and a lot of journalists are getting wrong or ignoring. Is there a chance that it's because the reality, that nuanced reality, doesn't fit into kind of the simple narrative that they expect or maybe want to find?
Well, I would step a little bit farther back from that. I mean, I definitely agree with those words, but I think it's even a bigger problem because we have we had for a long time in this country, until Trump sort of shattered it, a kind of technocratic consensus that sort of existed since the fall of the Soviet Union, that progressive or globalization and technocratic governance and all these sorts of things were going to solve problems in a way that would lift all boats and that would bring us sort of inevitably towards this kind of, you know, perfect system. It was sort of this era that we were living in where the long tail of the end of history. And all of a sudden, it turns out that a lot of people felt left behind by that. A lot of people didn't think that the way of life that we've built in the last 35 years was a very desirable, enjoyable, or workable way of doing things. And quite frankly, Democrats are as guilty as anyone of ignoring those sentiments. And, you know, again, Kenosha becomes a really good example of that because Kenosha is a place that was really buffeted by American trade policy. And Democratic politicians from Bill Clinton to Barack Obama to, you know, way on down the line, kind of told everyone, listen, just play ball on trade and everyone's life will get better because trade will lift all the boats in America. And I think a lot of people just fundamentally don't believe that and didn't believe that trade did improve their lives, but also were told by Democrats, hey, you don't have a choice about this. This is the way the world is going. And that caused an alienation.
We're talking with James Pogue right now. He's a contributor to Harper's Magazine and author of the August cover story titled The Art of Losing: Can Democrats Win Back Post-Industrial America? You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're from Kenosha or the southeastern part of the state, how do you feel about your local economy and your local way of life? What have changes in the labor landscape over the years meant for your political outlook? And wherever you are in the state, do you feel passionate about any political message out there right now? Or are you still looking for something that would really inspire you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue this conversation here on Central Time after this short break. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're picking up our conversation with James Pogue of Harper's Magazine about his 6 weeks of reporting from Kenosha County, looking at how people there feel about politics and what they want to hear from those running for office. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're from Kenosha or near the state line area, how do you feel about life in your community and its economy? Do you think deindustrialization has changed the political mood of your city or town? And wherever you are in Wisconsin, are you feeling excited about politics or maybe a bit exhausted? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And James, historically, places like Kenosha, Racine, Janesville were strongholds for the Democratic Party, but a lot of folks there, including former union workers, now lean Republican. Is there a sense that Democrats fell down on the job somewhere along the way?
Well, you know, I put that question to the mayor of Kenosha, and he had a really interesting two-part answer where on the first hand, you know, he said basically, hey, it's really simple. Democrats ignored the southeastern part of this state and Democrats nationally ignored Wisconsin, which I think is quite true. Then he sort of paused and had a follow-up to that where he said that a lot of people he knew no longer felt, and he paused and he said, apart. And it was interesting to try to understand what he meant because I felt like I did understand, but he meant that people didn't feel a part of civic life and they didn't feel a part of politics more broadly. And they didn't feel a part of an American project that was sort of about making their lives better and about making the country better anymore. They felt, you know, hey, there might be polarization and there might be a team that some people are on, but where do I fall and why does any of this matter? And I do think that Democrats have very much fallen down on the job in that regard, in the sense of like, hey, once upon a time, Democrats in this part of the country that we're talking about were very associated with working for the rights of working people. as that changed, and as they didn't prove to be as interested in that as they had ever claimed, what replaced it? And again, Democrats have not really wrestled with that question. And when they have wrestled with it, as in, you know, sort of the 2016 and 2020 primaries, they've mostly come down on this thing of, hey, we need to focus on electability. With the result that more and more people remain sort of alienated and confused about what the Democratic Party actually stands for. And at some point, at least in my opinion, they are going to have to figure out an answer to that.
We're talking with James Pogue about his cover story for Harper's Magazine titled "The Art of Losing: Can Democrats Win Back Post-Industrial America?" You can join in at 800-642-1234. And let's go to the phones. Joan is in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon. What I feel passionately about is that in Wisconsin, we have not had a fair election since 2009. 2010 election, after that time, we had our legislators making these very gerrymandered districts in the state. And at the current time, there's no chance for a Democratic candidate to make any kind of headway in a Republican gerrymandered district. When the U.S. Supreme Court refused to take the case with the gerrymandering with regard to Wisconsin, I said to my friends and colleagues, democracy died today. I would like to see these Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature, Senate and House, to have a really meaningful conversation and have some meaningful work on redistricting that does not involve gerrymandering. And to this point, I have seen nothing of the kind come from these Republicans. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for the call, Joan. And James, I'm curious, did the issue of redistricting and gerrymandering come up at all when you were talking with people?
You know, absolutely. Obviously, that's such a huge issue in Wisconsin. And, you know, candidly, the reason that it has become such a massive issue in Wisconsin is because Wisconsin Republicans, since the beginning of the Walker era, really played to win. And they played to win very, very hard. And they pushed these very, very big sort of like principle kind of ideas. And, you know, I can maybe disagree with whether or not I liked any of that. But as a method of politics, it turned out to be wildly and almost dangerously effective, right? And so a little bit of what comes across in the piece, I would think, is that, you know, in order to counteract that, just as on a national level, you kind of have to have a landslide election to win back the House. One party or another has to have a big sweep. That may start playing out in other smaller areas, you know, on state levels as well, as this gerrymandering becomes a bigger issue.
James, did people tell you, were they able to articulate what kind of candidate or message would really excite them and make them feel more invested in politics? And going back to something you said earlier, feel like politics actually means something in their lives?
Well, you know, and I mentioned this in the piece, and, you know, I hope this doesn't make anyone doubt the general objectivity of my work here. But, you know, I was very in the tank for Bernie Sanders, for the reason that I thought he was the kind of person who would really excite people who hadn't been in politics before and who would really get people into this kind of new vision of building an American project. Candidly, that didn't really work out because people in Kenosha who were, you know, very invested in the Democratic Party were really interested in getting rid of Trump, right? And so, you know, on the Democratic side, you had a lot of people who really, really, that was their biggest priority. And I think that's totally understandable. But it leaves open the question of what is a candidate for president who's a Democrat going to do when there isn't a foil of someone like Trump, when it isn't reactive? What is the broader vision of the Democratic Party? And really, no one had much of an idea. And I wouldn't say that I do either, honestly. But, you know, that's sort of the big lacuna in our politics right now.
And briefly, in our last half minute or so, a lot has happened in the months since you left Wisconsin in February, still a few months before the election. Do you think Joe Biden has the potential to win back places like Kenosha County?
You know, I don't do predictions, of course. I think obviously it looks a lot like he's going to now. But, you know, again, our elections are really about enthusiasm and buy-in. And Democrats are very enthused right now, but there's a lot that can happen, and there's a lot that can sort of suck that out, because Biden is a reactive candidate. Biden is a candidate of non-Trump. And unless he finds some way to shore that up, any little misstep could cause that to fall away.
And is it significant that the DNC, which was going to be in southeastern Wisconsin, is going to be virtual? Do you think that that would have given more of a bump to Democrats by saying, hey, we're here and we care?
You know, I'm maybe just conjecturing, but I think a lot of Democrats are happy that that Wisconsin has gotten as much attention as it already has. I think people do feel like it's getting the attention now. I think that's going to be a little less of an issue. But, you know, I'm not from Wisconsin, so I can't really speak to it.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining us. And it's a really interesting piece.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
James Pogue is a contributor to Harper's Magazine. He talked with us about his latest cover story for Harper's. It's The Art of Losing. Can Democrats Win Back Post-Industrial America? You can find a link to that at WPR.org/Central Time.